so we're within a week of Rosh Hashanah, and I wanted to devote the shiur this evening to Inyan Diyoma, and begin by discussing, as we often do, matters of mitzvah and minhag, and then moving on to matters of theme and essence. Well, of course, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, the two are very much intertwined. The Torah refers to Rosh Hashanah as Yom Teruah, a day of Teruah. And that tells us that the mitzvah of the day is shofar. Interestingly, as we know, we are familiar with three shofar sounds. I mean, each of them has their variations, but there is the tkia and the shavarim and the teruah. In terms of Rosh Hashanah, the Torah only mentions the word Teruah. In Parshas Pinchas, it calls it Yom Teruah. In Parshas Emor, we have Zichron Teruah. There is no mention of the Tekiah explicitly with regard to Rosh Hashanah. That is something that is derived, that is imported, so to speak, through Drashas Chazal from Yovel. Yovel is the sister mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah, because the other time in the Torah where there's a mitzvah to sound the shofar. And the tkiah is mentioned with regards to Yovel, not Rosh Hashanah. In fact, shofar itself, as the instrument of the teruah, is also not mentioned explicitly in Rosh Hashanah. That is also brought in from Yovel. The ha'avartim shofar teruah is said with regards to Yovel. It all comes in through Gezeira Shava. Which means, as far as the Torah is concerned, its terminology, there is the tkiah sound, which is the straight, unbroken sound. And then there is the teruah. Now, we are aware of another sound, which is called shavarim. I mean, where is shavarim mentioned? Shavarim is not mentioned. Shavarim is a variation on teruah. In other words, the Gemara discusses what exactly is the nature of the teruah. All we know is that it's not a tkiah. It's less or shorter sounds than a tkiah. But the question is, are they sounds yet of some duration, like the shavarim? Maybe that's the teruah that the Torah is referring to. Or are they sounds of almost no duration, literally a syllables of sound, which is what we have in the teruah. So shavarim and teruah, in our parlance, are both options or possibilities with regards to the word teruah in the Torah. And we've spoken in the past about the shavarim, and there's different opinions as to what the shavarim sounds like, and we never really discussed the teruah. The background, actually, to the idea that the teruah, whatever it is a shorter sound, interestingly, is based on the Targum. Because when the Torah says, Yom Teruah, Yelechem, a day of teruah, the Targum translates that as Yom Yebava. And Yebava means a kind of like a sobbing, and or a crying. And the Gemara wants to know what type of cries. There's different ways of crying. Is it the longer sounds or the shorter sounds? And that's the shvarim and the teruah. Practically, in almost all communities, the teruah sounds the same. The teruah is essentially a minimum of 9 syllables of sound. Those 9 dots of sound or syllables of sound, they constitute the duration of a tkiah. And that's really what a teruah sounds like. Some people do more than 9. It's rare, actually, to have someone who does only 9. If he's a yekeh, he'll do only 9. But most people, once they get going, it doesn't stop so easy, and therefore it will go to a dozen or so, and that's fine. I mean, 9 is the minimum. And that's what a teruah sounds like. However, there are certain kehillas where the teruah sounds a little different. And instead of being, in a sense, self-contained, almost like a staccato type of dots of sound or syllables of sound, the way that the teruah comes in is more of quavers. It's like a wavering sound. So in other words, it's a continuous sound. It has no breaks in it, but it goes up and down in pitch very rapidly. And this actually is well known as the Yemenite teruah. The Temanim have a masora about doing the teruah in this way. I spoke to a Baal Tokeya actually just this afternoon, and he told me, because one can only imagine how that waver comes out, it's not as it appears. Some people, they try and move their mouth around and get the waver like that. Some move the shofar around. But actually, the way that it's really done, it's based on the stomach muscles themselves. They flex and expand and constrict rapidly, and that way, that's where it comes from. So it's fair to say, I think, that this type of trua, one literally needs the stomach for it in order to produce it. But what's interesting is that there's an unlikely chavrusa here, because on the one hand, it's well known as the Taimani type of trua, this wavering sound. But it is also reported that this was the way the trua was done in the Beis HaMedrash of the Chasam Sofer in Presburg, Hungary. Hungary and Yemen don't normally unite in terms of their minhagim, certainly not just the two of them, and yet here we see that they both did the trua in this way. And what is the source? Interestingly, there is quite a lot of discussion in early sources regarding having the trua this way. Rav Sajagon, and it really goes back to the Gaonim, Rav Sajagon explains or describes the trua as a kol ro'eid. Ro'eid as a shaky sound. Ra'ad is to shake. And as the sound shakes, it doesn't stop and start, but it shakes in that way. But that's the wavering sound of the trua. And that seems to be a basis, really, for doing the trua in this way. Kol ro'eid. And moreover, Rav Sajagon is not alone amongst the Gaonim for describing the trua in this way. One of the classic Mefarshim on the Rambam's Mishnah Torah is a sefer called Migdal Oz. He himself was one of the Rishonim. And he describes his experiences as he traveled to Eretz Yisrael. This is in Hilchas Shofar. He quotes the relevant section. And he says, "Kishezachiti lios be'eretz HaKodesh," and I was there for Yomim Neroim. Everywhere I went, people were sounding the trua in a way that I'd never heard before. I was from wherever I'd heard it before. It was always these self-contained syllables, these staccato type of dots of sound. But everywhere in where I was in Eretz Yisrael, they had this wavering sound. And I asked people, where does it come from? So, and he says, most people said, well, that's the way we always did it. I mean, that's where it comes from. And that's what we saw when we were growing up. And so he says, I was persistent and I found someone who actually knew the ultimate source. And they said that the source was, again, in the Gaonim, two of the late the later Rishonim, Rav Sharira Gaon and Rav Hai Gaon, almost at the end of the Tukuf of the Gaonim. They had a Mesorah from them that this is how the Trua is to sound. This wavering, unbroken sound. And the Migdal Oz himself says that the earliest source, or earlier yet than the Gaonim, because the Gemara doesn't talk about it one way or the other, is in the Yerushalmi. Because the Yerushalmi in Maseches Rosh Hashanah describes the Trua, and the Yerushalmi says the Trua is a sound of Tarimuta. Now, what does Tarimuta mean? What Tarimuta means, explains the Migdal Oz, based on how the Mefarshim explained, that again, it's this kind of shaking sound, it's a wavering sound. So it seems that the Yerushalmi itself is a source for the unbroken wavering Trua. In any case, this is a matter of understanding the different minhagim, be that as it may, certainly the widespread minhag, almost universal nowadays, is the distinct sounds, the self-contained sounds amongst Ashkenazim and Sephardim. What's interesting is that to come back to the source of it all, where does Trua come from? It's called Yom Yebava. So it's very important to note, as there is a discussion among the Rishonim, as to what's the intent of the words Yom Yebava. Again, Yebava is a sob, or a cry, and the Torah says, the sound of the shofar needs to be like that. And the very major question discussed among Rishonim is, with what respect are we likening the shofar sound to that crying sound? And the two possibilities are, is it strictly in terms of duration? In other words, you just need to know the length of people's sounds when they cry, and then that's the way that the Torah describes it, but it has nothing to do with crying. I mean, the shofar is not a cry in that way. It's something else entirely. But in terms of describing the duration of the specific sounds, it uses crying for length purposes only. That seems to be the opinion of Rashi and Tosfos. Whereas according to the Ramban, it writes clearly about this, that it's also an atmospheric direction. In other words, the shofar, it's meant to resemble a crying sound, not just have the same duration. And therefore, depending on that question, it would or would not be worthwhile to investigate how do people cry. When a person cries, do they cry with long sobs, with short sobs? And if they cry with short sobs, do they cry with short self-contained sobs, or does the voice waver? And maybe it varies from place to place. But that entire line of inquiry is only meaningful if you understand that the word yavava is meant to represent the atmosphere of the sound, in addition to the length of the sound. The only other practical matter, which sometimes happens actually, with regards to the trua, I mean, we're familiar with, you know, good bal tokea, those nine bursts of sound will follow each other in rapid succession, rapid fire. But sometimes, towards the end, or this may be the third or fourth person that the bal tokea is blowing for, the trua can slow down a little bit. It sounds like it's running out of steam somewhat, and they don't follow each other literally with such a rapidity. And the question is that acceptable? So the answer is, in almost all cases it is, because in order to be considered a distinct sound, one needs to pause the amount of time it takes to take a breath, and rarely does that happen. Even as the teruas are perhaps petering out a little bit and not following each other in such rapid succession, rarely is there such a pause between them, and therefore the trua is acceptable. There are many kehillas, it's becoming more and more popular depending on where you go, that after shul and after everything's happened, they get together around the bima and they begin to go through all the other variations that they didn't do during the 100 sounds of shul. How does the shavarim sound? Is it two syllables or three syllables? Is there a break in the pitch? Does it go up at the end? Does it go down at the end? Does it do both? And one can actually stay there for quite a long time further and go way past 100 sounds. But I've yet to hear any of the alternative trua being brought into the mix, as if to say doing all of the above or any of the above with the wavering trua. But you never know. Perhaps in time that may also gain a following. And me'inyan le'inyan, having discussed a little bit about the form of the teruah sound, another word about the teruah, and if you've never heard it, it can be quite surprising. As we know, our minhag is that in shul we pretty much work up to 100 sounds. You've got your 30 before Musaf, and then another, depending on Ashkenaz or Sfarad, you take care of another 60 or so, or 30 or 60, and then all of the rest are done at the end of davening at various points. By the time we sing Adon Olam, there's 100 out there. And if you're Ashkenazi, that is the end of that. However, there is once again a Masora from Rav Amram Gaon. Once again, from the Gaonim, it's quoted by Rishonim, and that is that once all of the 100 sounds are finished, we sound a teruah gedola. Now, if you've never heard that before, it sounds like someone made a mistake. Teruah gedola. But that is exactly what Rav Amram Gaon says, just a teruah, and a long teruah. Now, what's the source? Or more correctly, what's behind this? After all, I think everything is satisfied by the 100. What's with this almost haftorah type sound of the Teruah Gedola number 101? And the Rishonim explain that it is kedei le'arbev es ha-satan, to confound the satan. Now, the idea of confounding the satan actually is mentioned in the Gemara. It's a very obviously abstract and esoteric idea. Somehow the quality of the shofar will stop the forces of evil from accusing or criticizing the Jewish people. In the Gemara, it is presented as the explanation for why we blow before Musaf and during Musaf. You only really need 30 sounds, but already in the times of the Gemara, it was doubled to 60. 30 before Musaf and 30 during at some stage. And the Gemara there explains that that is done kidei le'arbev es ha-satan, to confound the satan. Now, in context, what that means is that we do not wish any harm, so to speak, to befall our prayers. When we're davening, we want them to be satan-free or satan-proof. And therefore, we blow the shofar, we establish our devotion to the mitzvah of shofar and everything it represents, and we're good to go. That's in terms of vouchsafing our tfilos from any criticism or accusation from the satan. The question is, though, so when we're davening, we're in shul, and it's all good. But what happens when shul finishes? Everyone goes home. And what do they do when they go home? They have a suda. And once again, Rav Amram Gon says, one doesn't wish the satan to be mekatrik there either, as if to say, look at how they finish up Rosh Hashanah, and therefore one blows almost in advance. It's to cover the suda that we blow this tura gadola, and the satan is out for the rest of the day. This is the min amongst the Sfaradim. B'nai Sfarad, at the end of the shul, they blow a Trua Gadola. The first time I saw it, actually, was at a time that I was learning in a Sfaradi kolel. I was the only Ashkenazi in the whole kolel. So I had plenty of people to ask about this, and I said, is it really true that Sfaradim blow a Trua Gadola? And they're, of course, doesn't everyone? And so I told them that, no, actually, Ashkenazim blow a Tkiya Gadola, and they looked at me like I didn't know what I was talking about. So I then found out what it meant to be in the minority. But the Minhag Sfarad is to blow the Trua Gadola. And the reason that was given in the original sources themselves, as we said, La'abri v'sasat. However, I came across a wonderful explanation of the idea of Trua Gadola. It's quoted in the name of Rabbi Rucham Fischel Perla. Rabbi Rucham Fischel Perla is famous for his mammoth commentary on Rav Sadia Gaon's Sefer HaMitzvos. It is so lengthy, it is often impossible actually to find the words of Rav Sadia Gaon anywhere, because he writes and writes. He wrote it over, I think, a period of something like 40 years. And he was a Gaon, and his knowledge was limitless, seemingly. And Rabbi Rucham Fischel Perla says a wonderful thing. What's behind, and of course he's not Sfardi, he's a Rucham Fischel Perla, he's from Poland, but he provides another approach to the background of Trua Gadola. We noted before that of the different shofar sounds, the only one that is mentioned in the Torah with regards to Rosh Hashanah is Terua. Yom Terua, Zichron Terua. Now it is true that we need other sounds as well. We need the Tkiya sound. They are learned from Midrasha, and it's all De'oraisa. If a person did not blow the Tkiya sound, he hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah at all on a De'oraisa level. However, says Rabbi Rucham Fischel Perla, we see from a number of cases that even though many things may be de'oraisa, either explicit in the pasuk or derived from a drasha, but there is always some precedence that is given to that which is explicit in the pasuk. It makes a difference. It is de'oraisa and more. The D of de'oraisa is in bolder ink for something that's explicit in the pasuk, and there's many, many examples of this, but without getting into them, just to as a very beautiful way of emphasizing the fact that of all the sounds, it was the Trua that was mentioned explicitly in the pasuk. So as we go through the Tkiya, Shvarim, Trua, Tkiya, but the final sound, the enduring note, is the Trua, to express again that idea that the Trua was the one that was mentioned explicitly in the pasuk. So that is the Terua Gadola, sound 101 for the Sfaradim. Minhag Ashkenaz, of course, is, as we said, Tekiya, Tekiya Gadola. And Tekiya Gadola, not only is it a different sound, it's sound 100, because the sound 100 is a Tekiya, it's just that the Tekiya goes longer. And the source for Tekiya Gadola, so here too, the classic reason is to be found in the Rishonim, and then there is another suggestion from much more recent times in the Acharonim. Of the Rishonim, The one who discusses the source for Tekiya Gedola, which of course we know very well, is the Maharil, Rabbi Yaakov Molin, and the Maharil, who's one of the later Rishonim, he is looked upon as one of the fathers of Minhag Ashkenaz, Maharil. And the Maharil explains that the point of the Tekiya Gedola, of lengthening the Tekiya, is not for purposes of the mitzvah of shofar, but rather it's to let people know that this session has finished so that they can proceed and do whatever is next. In other words, says the Maharil, there are actually two times that we do a Tekiya Gedola. The first is at the end of the first 30, right before Mustaf, right? Sound number 30 is Tekiya Gedola, and then of course at the very end. What they have in common is that the after the first set of 30 sounds, the Kehila then proceeds, and they say Ashrei, and they say there's Psukim, Ashrei Ha'am Yodei Teruah, etc. And therefore, as a signal for them that this session has finished, and they should then proceed, the sound is extended. Says Maharil, what is the source in the Torah for the idea that people know that a certain time or period or state is over by a lengthy sound? Well, that's actually what happened in Matan Torah. As long as the Shechina was on Har Sinai, no one was allowed to go near the mountain, and it was sectioned off, v'ish lo yaleh imach, etc. and so forth. But at a certain point, the Shechina left, and Har Sinai actually became a mountain like other mountains. It was no longer off limits. And in the words of the Pasuk in Parshas Yisro, b'mshoch hayovel hema yalu bahar. B'mshoch hayovel, the yovel is the shofar. When the shofar has that longer sound, moshech, that drawn-out, extended sound, that people will know that this state is terminated, and they can then proceed. If they want, they can go onto the mountain, etc. And therefore, it says Maharil, we see from the Torah itself that b'mshoch hayovel signifies the end of a certain state, and people should then proceed. And therefore, we have a Tekiya Gedola after the first 30, so that people should know to proceed with the Psukim of Ashrei, and of course we have then the Tekiya Gedola at the end of all of them, so that people will know that the Tekiyos are finished, and if they want, they can go home. So that's a very fascinating source for the idea of Tekiya Gedola from Matan Torah itself, and of course very relevant, because all of the references of Shofar in the Torah, with the word shofar itself, are from Har Sinai, are from Matan Torah. The bracha of shofaros begins by describing Matan Torah, and therefore we also have this parallel of Tekiya Gedola with b'mshoch hayovel hema ya'alu bahar. I came across today another explanation of the idea of Tekiya Gedola. Again, very wonderful. All of these ideas, they kind of come together, give a very rich picture. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that the shofar was blown in the Beis Hamikdash, that is to say, on Rosh Hashanah, in a very specific way. And this way only for the Beis Hamikdash. Namely, it was accompanied by chatzotzros, by trumpets, because that's part of how the Seder Avodah goes in the Beis Hamikdash. So actually, if a person heard the shofar in the Beis HaMikdash, she would hear three sounds, because the shofar was in the middle, the Baal Tokeah, and on either side was someone with a chatzoteres. And they would blow together until a certain point. The Mishnah describes, shtei chatzotzros min hatzdadin. There were two trumpets, right, one on either side, and then it says they would all blow, but shofar ma'arich. As much as all three would begin at the same time, but in the end, the shofar was the only sound that was heard. Shofar marach, the sound of the shofar would continue. The chatzotzros mekatzros, and the trumpets, they would curtail at a certain point. When they'd done the tkia, after a while, those two would stop, and all you would have was the sound of the shofar in the middle. And the reason why, says the Mishnah very simply, is because at the end of the day, shemitzvas hayom b'shofar. I mean, the essential mitzvah is shofar, and therefore that final sound, you have a moment where it's only the shofar, because it keeps on going where the others have stopped. So says the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah, as explained seemingly by Rashi. So Rav Yosef Cohen, Zatzal, the Beis Din of Yerushalayim, he was a grandson of Rabbi Pesach Frank, and in his explanatory notes to Rav Tzvi Pesach's Mikroi Kodesh, suggests a wonderful thing. And that is, wherever possible, when we have a mitzvah, and it was done in a certain way in the Beis HaMikdash, we like to note that. We like to replicate that in some way. We call it Zeichel HaMikdash. In some instances, we don't have that, the mitzvah at all. It was only for the Mikdash, like Sfiras HaOmer nowadays, Zeichel HaMikdash. Taking Lulav and Esrog on all 7 days of Sukkot is only in the Mikdash. But outside of the Mikdash, it's only one day, by Yom HaRishon. But we do it all 7 days, Zeichel HaMikdash. Here, what's interesting is, the mitzvah of shofar exists everywhere on a Torah level. But it was done differently in the Mikdash. And therefore, the final tkiya is a tkiya gedola. It extends. Why does it extend? Zeichel HaMikdash. To remind us of how the shofar was blown in the Mikdash, that it would extend to go further than the sounds of the chatzotzros. Very beautiful explanation, and we see how each generation adds its insight at Kedarka Shel Torah. I'd like to now move to matters of thematic matters of Rosh Hashanah itself. And as we will see, we'll be focusing quite a bit on the words of the Torah as it describes Rosh Hashanah. And we'll be guided more or less from here onwards by Reb Leib Mintzberg, Shalita, one of the great Talmidei Chachamim of our time, who has a wonderful volume on Yomim Neroim. And we'll begin as follows. We should note, first things first, the Torah describes Rosh Hashanah on two occasions. In Parshas Emor, as it goes through the Moadim, that's Vayikra Perek Kaf Gimel, so it gets to Rosh Hashanah, and there it calls Rosh Hashanah Zichron Truah. Zichron Truah. Yelachem Shabbason, Zichron Truah, Mikra Kodesh. Later on, in Parshas Pinchas, that's in a separate Chumash altogether, in Parshas Pinchas, at the end, within the Parsha of the Musafim, that's when it describes Rosh Hashanah as Yom Teruah. So in Chumash Vayikra we have Zichron Truah, and in Chumash Bamidbar we have Yom Teruah. Interestingly, of those two psukim, the one that is cited as the source for the mitzvah of shofar is the second one, because that's when it focuses on the mitzvah. Yom Teruah. Zichron Teruah means something else. It's connected, but a linear mitzvah to blow the shofar, Yom Teruah is that mitzvah. It's very interesting that the Torah waited almost until the end of the fourth Chumash before providing the source for this mitzvah. Everything else is coming much earlier on. Yom Kippur and the Shalosh Regalim and so on and so forth. So our very simple question is, what is the difference in meaning between Yom Teruah and Zichron Teruah? Well, what is quite well known about this, which was proposed as the difference, is that they reflect different possibilities as to when Rosh Hashanah could fall. Does it fall during the week, or does it fall on Shabbos? This was the original suggestion as the source for the well-known halacha that when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, we don't blow the shofar. And the Gemara proposed that this is the resolution of these two psukim, because Yom Teruah sounds like the Teruah is happening. Zichron Teruah sounds like a remembrance of the Teruah, meaning there's no Teruah there, but we're remembering the Teruah because it's Shabbos. However, the Gemara's conclusion is that is not really the intent of those psukim, and that's not the resolution of those two expressions, for a very simple reason, that there's no reason why we shouldn't blow the shofar on a Torah level on Rosh Hashanah. Ultimately, we know it's a rabbinic enactment, prediction we shouldn't come to carry in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So in a sense, we move away from that resolution. It's not about Shabbos versus weekday. It's about something else. But what's very interesting is, as much as we move away, but we don't fully move away. Because that distinction, even though the Gemara does not remain with it in its conclusion, the Machzor still reflects it. Because as we know, when Rosh Hashanah falls during the week, as it will this year, we say, Vatiten lano es yom zikaron azeh, yom teruah. Whereas when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, we say, it's Yom HaZikaron HaZeh, Yom Zichron Trua. So it's very interesting that the Gemara has moved away from this. It isn't really about when Rosh Hashanah falls, but nonetheless, it remains the inspiration for the rabbinic enactment, and therefore it's still reflected, it's still preserved in the Machzor. Shabbos is called Zichron Trua. Okay? But nonetheless, the question remains, so what is Zichron Trua? And here, Ramban gives us one or two lines, which will really open up the matter for us here. Zichron Trua. A remembrance of Trua. Mo, Yom Trua Yelachem. It's really like Yom Trua, but obviously not exactly the same. Yomar. What it means is shenaria b'yom hazeh, that we should sound the trua on this day, and through that, v'yeh lanu lezikaron lefnei Hashem, and through the trua we will be remembered, so to speak. It will be a remembrance for us before Hashem, as it says elsewhere with regards to the chatzotzros. Back to the chatzotzros in Parshas Balosecha, utekatem b'chatzotzros. That on those occasions where you blow the chatzotzos, the result will be, the effect will be, v'hayalachem lezikaron. And therefore, according to Ramban, the phrase zichron trua means remembrance through trua. That is to say, remembrance of us by Hashem through our trua. That is the pshat in Zichron Trua. Trua that leads to Zikaron. And if we pause just for a moment to reflect on the parshanut, to see how there's a different nuance here, how the words Zichron Trua go together. The original understanding that it's about when Rosh Hashanah falls on Shabbos, so it's Zichron Trua, it's a remembrance of the Trua because the Trua is not there. So we are remembering the Trua. It's a remembrance of the Trua that's not there. Whereas according to Ramban, Zichron Trua doesn't mean remembrance of the Trua, it means remembrance through the Trua. The Trua very much is there, and the Zikaron is the result of the Trua when it's blown, not what happens when it isn't. And that is the effect of Trua leads to Zikaron. So now the question is, again in Parshanut, if we wish to be thorough and clear, we may ask, why did the Torah sometimes call it Zichron Trua, which, as the Ramban is explaining, is about the effect? Trua will lead to Zikaron. And why, in the other occasion, does it say Yom Trua, which is focusing more on the mitzvah and not so much on the effect? What determines how Rosh Hashanah is presented or described? Well, Rav Mintzberg says, very simply, the reason why Rosh Hashanah is described differently in these two places is because the two sections of the Chumash are dealing with different things. In other words, the section in Chumash Vayikra, which we call the Parsha of the Moadim, is dedicated to explaining which days are Moadim and why. They're presenting the Yom Tov. Now, it's true that Yom Tov have mitzvahs, but the goal of the psukim there is, it presents mitzvahs, but it's to tell you why it's a Yom Tov. So Sukkot, for example, it says, Leman Yedudah Raseichem, why do we sit in Sukkot? And so on and so forth. Whereas in Chumash Bamidbar, in Parshas Pinchas, where we find Yom Trua, that's the section of Musafim. The goal or the purpose of the Parsha of Musafim isn't to explain to you why it's a Yom Tov. That's happened already. It's just to tell you what the special mitzvahs of the Yom Tov are. Specifically, the special korbanos, musaf, but by extension, the special mitzvahs. So again, in Chumash Vayikra, if this distinction is becoming clearer to us, in Chumash Vayikra, it's presenting the Yom Tov, which has mitzvahs. In Chumash Vayikra, it's presenting the mitzvahs of the Yom Tov. And therefore, says Rav Mintzberg, we understand that in Chumash Bamidbar, if it's about the mitzvahs, like the korbanos, so then it calls it Yom Trua, because Trua is the mitzvah of Rosh Hashanah. So it doesn't talk about why it's a Yom Tov, it just says what you have to do on that day. You have to bring certain musaf, and you have to blow the shofar, Yom Trua, so the focus is very directly the mitzvah. Then Chumash Vayikra, where it's presenting what the Yom Tov is about. Why is Rosh Hashanah a Yom Tov? And you cannot say it's a Yom Tov because we blow the shofar. Because blowing the shofar is a mitzvah, but we have mitzvahs every day. And not every day is a Yom Tov. And even if there's certain days that you have special mitzvahs, it still doesn't make that day a Yom Tov. So how does Rosh Hashanah become a Yom Tov? How does it become a Moed? How does it become a Mikra Kodesh? What's the basis of the status of Rosh Hashanah as a Yom Tov? The answer is because the Trua does something. It brings about Zikaron Latova. And that is the basis of why Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Tov. Rosh Hashanah is a Yom Tov because we are Nizkarim Latova before Hashem. And therefore, the way the day is presented, or the way the Trua is presented in Chumash Vayikra, which is establishing the basis of the Yom Tov, it's not the mitzvah of Trua, but the effect of that mitzvah. That's worth making a Yom Tov over. Zichron Trua. And indeed, says of Mintzberg, this is the simple answer to the question raised by Rishonim as to why Rosh Hashanah, when the Torah presents Rosh Hashanah, it never really focuses on the fact that it's Rosh Hashanah. It never calls it Rosh Hashanah. It never calls it Yom HaDin. I mean, these are terms that we will use. When we refer to the day, we call it Rosh Hashanah, because that's what it is. And there's many things that come out from that, but they happen because it's Rosh Hashanah. And one of the things that happens is Yom HaDin. And we mention Yom HaDin as well. It gets its mention. If you ever hear the Gabbai makes the Mishaberach, hopefully there's not too many of them. And he says, B'vor Shalah l'chvod Yom HaDin. That's what it's called, because it is. And the Torah doesn't talk about it. It's like a bit of a secret. All the Torah says is Zichron Trua. And almost from that, you need to work backwards to understand, well, what is special about this day that I would need to be remembered for good? Must be inferring backwards that something's happening and perhaps I'm in danger of not being remembered for good. Presumably that means that there's a reckoning going on. There's a din going on. And why today? Well, it's the first of Tishrei. It's Rosh Hashanah. So all of these very basic aspects of the day are not explicitly mentioned in the Torah. We infer them from the word Zichron Trua. Why would the Torah lay emphasis on Zichron Trua? Says Rav Mintzberg, very simply, Zichron Trua is the only aspect of the day that makes it into a Yom Tov. No other aspect of the day makes it into a Yom Tov. Because if you consider them one by one, I mean, what are the two prior aspects of the day? It's Rosh Hashanah. It's the first day of the year. Okay. Did anything happen? Let's not forget. Moadim, Mikra'i Kodesh, relate to Yisrael specifically. Mekadesh Yisrael Bahazmanim. Mekadesh Yisrael B'yom HaZikaron. Which means something that's true for the world generally, if we don't go further than that, it's got nothing specifically to do with Yisrael, so it's not one of Moadei Yisrael, or Mikra'i Kodesh. So Rosh Hashanah is the first day of the year, but it's the first day of the year for everyone. It is Yom HaDin. Being the first day of the year, it is Yom HaDin. But it's Yom HaDin for everyone. Va'al HaMedinos Bo Yeyamer, it's for everyone. And moreover, without putting too fine a point on it, but as the Maharal points out in the Sefer Tiferes Yisrael and Perek Kaf Zayin, no one ever made a Yom Tov out of a Day of Judgment. I mean, even Jews are not that optimistic. As if to say, if all we knew about Rosh Hashanah is that it's a Day of Judgment, we probably would not make a Yom Tov. Because why would we? We're so used to Rosh Hashanah being a Yom Tov, for a good reason. But the reason is not that it's a Day of Judgment. Judgment and festival do not together. So which begs the question, so why is it a Yom Tov? It seems to be almost now counterintuitive. If it's Yom HaDin, it's a serious day, which it is and should remain. It's many things. But how did it get to be a Yom Tov? The answer is one thing. Zichron Trua. In other words, what happens to us on this day because it's Rosh Hashanah, and because that leads to Yom HaDin, and because that leads us to take measures through the shofar, which bring our remembrance for good before Hashem, that's where the Yom Tov is. That's the fulcrum of the Yom Tov. And that's why that is the only aspect of the day that is mentioned in Emor. Because that's the Yom Tov. It's built of Zichur and Trua. It's not built of Rosh Hashanah. And it's not built of Yom HaDin. One of them is neutral and the other is going the other direction. Zichur and Trua is the basis of the Yom Tov. And that's why in our Tfilos and in Kiddush, we refer to the day as Yom HaZikara. That's the basis of the Yom Tov. Mekadesh Yisrael v'Yom HaZikaron. Because the Mikra Kodesh comes from the Zikaron. So what's fascinating to consider is that Rosh Hashanah, and by extension Yom Kippur, which we'll have to discuss separately, but Rosh Hashanah, it's a Yom Tov like the Shalosh Regalim, but it differs in one key respect. Where does Yom Tov derive from? When it comes to the Shalosh Regalim, the Yom Tov derives from things that already happened. I mean, why is it Pesach? We're commemorating, and hopefully reliving, but commemorating something that happened. We left Mitzrayim. That's what made it into a Yom Tov. It's based on something that happened in the past. And Sukkot, we're commemorating what happened in those of that original time. Rosh Hashanah is also a Yom Tov, but it's not a Yom Tov based on something that happened. It's a Yom Tov based on something that will happen today. The basis of the Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah is Zichron Trua, but Zichron Trua is a process that needs to happen every Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah in advance from sunset on the first of Tishrei is because it is in anticipation of becoming a Yom Tov through Zichron Trua. And therefore, which I believe so far already very fundamental, very profound discussions just from the words Yom Trua, Zichron Trua. But what we do see is that Yom Teruah, again, a fascinating comment, for the Torah does really use the Trua to define the day. Yom Trua means it's a day of Trua. It's not a day where you blow the shofar, but somehow Trua defines the day. It doesn't say Bahariosem, the mitzvah is not to blow the shofar. The mitzvah is to make the day into a day of Trua. And actually, there could be halachic nafkaminas, because as we've mentioned before, we keep going. You've got your minimum 30, and we just keep going. And in times of the Gemara, it's double to 60. And then after the Gemara, it keeps on going. And it's settled at approximately 100. It's a lot of shofar sounds. So much so that from a halachic point of view, some Rishonim already raised the question. Someone has to say it. isn't there an issue of Baltosif? Isn't there a problem of adding on to the mitzvah? One shouldn't add on to the mitzvah. Here, I mean, we have multiplied number of times over. And the Rishonim resolve it. And depends whether you're extending the mitzvah, adding on to the mitzvah, repeating the mitzvah. The answers are there. But what's very interesting is the answers are there to deal with the question, but what's happening here is that really Yom Teruah, in a sense, allows and maybe even beckons for more shofar sounds, because the Torah presented the mitzvah of shofar as a description of the day, a day of Teruah. So from a certain point of view, a day of Teruah has no limit. And if there's good reason to add Truas, there's nothing's going to stand in your way. It's true halachically that after Shul, we don't blow the shofar stum for no reason. But there's ample context to expand the Truas, because it's a Yom Truah. That's the day. Moreover, we can see very clearly through the words Zichron and Truah, which I believe are taking on more and more meaning, Zichron and Truah, that the concept of Zichronos is key in Rosh Hashanah. I mean, we know them as the three brachas, Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofaros. So Zichronos, where does it come from? It is directly coming from the Torah. Zichron Trua is a reference to Zichronos. Yet, as we know, there is a sister concept in Rosh Hashanah parallel concept, Malchios, of course, and Malchios comes first. And it's important to get an integrated picture as to how these things work together. They're not just two very important things that happen to exist on the same day. That we need to have a more synthesized understanding. And should we ask, we've seen very clearly, explicitly in the Torah, where does Zichronos come from? Zichron Truah. So now let us ask, well, where does Malchios come from? Does it come from the Torah? Says of Mintzberg, yes. Yom Teruah Yiyeh Lachem. Teruah at its most basic level is an expression of Malchios. The idea of sounding the Teruah is in recognition of Malchios. As we say, B'chatzotzros V'kol Shofar, Hariyu Lifnei HaMelech Hashem. The trumpet sound, first and foremost, as far as the Mintzberg is concerned, and most of his Sefer is actually about this, first and foremost, the truer sound is Hariyu Lifnei HaMelech Hashem. And therefore, actually, the two words Zichron Truah are expressing the two concepts of Zichronos and Malchios. Zichron, Zikaron Natova, and Malchios, which is expressed through the Truah. And therefore, not only do we add shofar sounds, because the Torah says Yom Truah, but we spend much of the Tefillah discussing Malchios. I mean, it runs through the entire Tefillah, Shachris and Musaf, and we mention it everywhere. Why do we mention it everywhere? Where does it come from? Says Rav Mintzberg, Malchios is a verbal expression of Truah. If Truah is about Hariyu Lefnei HaMelech Hashem, then the more you talk about Malchios, the more you're verbally expressing what Truah is about, and therefore discussing Malchios at length is ultimately its own emanation of Yom Truah, because it's putting into words what the shofar represents. And moreover, we can now understand the relationship between Malchios and Zichronos. I mean, it's possible to perhaps just miss this point and see them as just existing side by side, two very important things that we say on Rosh Hashanah, but never the twain shall meet. But actually, Zichron Truah, as we've seen, is that the Zikaron comes through the Truah. Zichron Truah, the Zikaron comes through the Truah. And therefore, and what does that mean? Raising very simple questions here. You sound the shofar, Hashem will remember you for good. Why? You notified him, you sounded the alarm. Sounding the shofar represents an acceptance and recognition of Malchios, Hariyu Lefnei HaMelech Hashem. If the Jewish people do that, their zikaron goes up before Hashem, Letova. In other words, on the day of Rosh Hashanah, which is Yom HaDin, and all things being equal, all actions should be assessed just for themselves, which could put some people in a precarious situation. What changed? What mitigates here? What happens is Malchios comes in. And Hashem has provided, in a sense, a mechanism whereby this is the day to focus on Malchios. And if we do, that changes everything. It takes, in a sense, it takes the focus off specific deeds, which will yet need to be accounted for. But the assessment of us as people on Rosh Hashanah is based on how we recognize and accept the concept of Malchios. And therefore, Malchios comes in as a defining characteristic of the Jewish people. Recognizing Malchios, it changes everything. It mitigates in terms of the din, and the zikaron comes. The Zikaron becomes Letova. And it's a very, I believe, wonderful way of understanding what Zichron Truah means and how Malchios and Zichronos relate to each other. Malchios leads to Zichronos. That's where the Zikaron is Ola Letova from Malchios. And the truth is, Mintzberg goes further, the Brach of Zichronos, we conclude with the words Zocher Habris. In other words, we're very clear as to what it is that we want Hashem to remember. The Brach of Zichronos, as we often note, has a very wide angle. It begins with everything, ends with one thing. We begin, Atazachem Masa Olam, you remember everything. And in the spirit of good old-fashioned Jewish chutzpah, we say, well, please just remember this one thing, and maybe not so much, actually, anything else. Zochera bris. Remember the bris. The bris with the avos. And therefore, we pin our hopes for Zichronos on remember the bris, and we're from them. And by the way, that's why, says Rav Mintzberg, the first time we ask Zachreinu L'chaim, the Hosafos of the Gaonim, during that Seris Mitshuva, is in the Bracha of Avos. It's interesting to consider. It doesn't seem to really be part of what the Bracha is talking about. We just seem, we can't, it sounds like we can't wait. We can't help it. So we just interrupt. And then we get back on topic. We're talking about the Avos, Bezochachas the Avos, maybe Goel, Zachreinu L'chaim. How did that, where did that come from? Says Rav Mintzberg, we mention it in Avos because it's through the Avos that Hashem will remember us for good. Zocher HaBris that he made with the Avos. They are our launch for Zikaron L'chaim. But what is the Bris with the Avos based on? Why did Hashem choose the Avos? He chose the Avos because more than anyone else, they spread the word of Hashem. Wherever they go, Vayikra Hashem Hashem, Vayikra Hashem Hashem, they brought awareness of Hashem's reign into the world. As if to say, the avoda of the avos that made them deserving of having this bris was a lifetime's avoda of malchios, of declaring Hashem as king in the world, and fighting against Avodah Zorah and all of its satellites. And therefore we get a deeper understanding of what we mean when we ask Hashem, remember the bris. Remember us for good. Remember the bris. Because there's no better way to make good on the merits of the fathers than by emulating the ways of the fathers. That energizes, that empowers that merit. If you just sit and do nothing and say, well, I'm an einikel from so-and-so, so schus avos, it's only going to get you so far. But if you emulate, then your relationship with that av is altogether different. The basis of bris avos was their approach of Malchios, their lifetime's dedication to Malchios. And therefore, as we engage in Malchios, and we surround ourselves around the mitzvah of Shofar, Hariyu Lefnei Melech Hashem, that's our emulation of the lives of the Avos. And as such, we say, Zocher HaBris, remember the Bris. Having, in a sense, shown ourselves to have an affinity for the basis of the bris, which is Malchios, we then ask Hashem to remember the bris. And this really brings us back to the episode that's in the center of Zichronos, the historic episode, and that's the episode of the Akedah. I mean, we talk about the Akedah the whole time on Rosh Hashanah. And it's very clear that somehow the Akedah is really the feeder for the bris, more than anything else. Even though Yaakov was not even alive at that time, but it's the kernel of the bris, because we conclude the bracha, Vakedas Yitzhak lezarah hayom baracham in tiskor, remember the Akedas Yitzhak for his descendants, Baruch Ata Hashem Zocher HaBris. So that's the conclusion, that's one thing. You always mention the matter just before you conclude, Ala Aretz V'Lamechia, Baruch Ata Hashem, Ala Aretz V'Lamechia, Akedah, Baruch Ata Hashem Zocher HaBris. So the Akedah really is an event that represents what the bris surrounds. And the reason why, says Rav Mintzberg, is because the Akedah was the high point of Malchios in the lives of the Avos. What does that mean? When we talk about Malchios, it's important to realize that Malchios really means two things. We say Hashem is king, that means two things. It means, number one, he is in control of the world. And for example, we say in Rosh Hashanah, Kemoshi Adano, Hashem Elokeinu, Shahashaltan Lefanecha, that's Hashem's control over the world, directing the world. But kingship means something else. It's also a relationship with those in the kingdom. They are his servants. And they need to hear him and to obey. And that's what we say, V'yasuchulam aguda achas, lasos ritzoncha belev avshalim. So that's a relationship with Melech. These are the two emanations of Malchios. Which means the Akedah really, for Avram and Yitzhak to be prepared to give up everything because Hashem told them to, even though it ran contrary to any notion of either self-interest or what is morally correct, It was an ultimate act of submission to Malchios. And at that point, the bris was set up for the Jewish people for all time. And really, I think this gives us a deeper understanding of what the Gemara means when it says in Rosh Hashanah Daf Tetzayin, Hashem says, "Blow the shofar, tiku b'shofar shel ayil, because I'll remember the Akedah, and I'll consider you as if you did the Akedah." Now, the first part to say Hashem remembers the Akedah, that seems to be more or less straightforward. Schus avos, recall schus avos, call upon schus avos, and I'll remember it. But the second half, I'll consider you as if you did the Akedah, that seems to be, in a sense, going a little far. I mean, he did was blow the shofar. I mean, no one's doing the Akedah. Except the point is that the more we understand the basic idea of blowing the shofar as Hariyu Lefnei HaMelech Hashem, recognition of Malchus Hashem, in all of its emanations, both in terms of recognition of control, Shashatam Lefanecha, recognition of having to follow his command, Lasses Ritzoncha B'Lev Avshalem. If we relate to the sound of the shofar in terms of what it represents of Hariyu Lefnei HaMelech Hashem, it really is reminiscent of the Akedah. It's not as extreme as the Akedah, but we're partaking of and subscribing to the same dedication and same ideas that ultimately led to the Akedah. And therefore, the sound of the shofar really is a blended sound. On the one hand, first and foremost, it's a sound of Malchios. That's in terms of what it represents. But then what does it achieve? It achieves Zikaron Latova, Zichron Trua. And this is really why the sound of the shofar is looked upon in many respects as a sound of tefillah. As we say, Shomea Kol Truas Amo Yisrael Berachamim. There's an aspect of tefillah here. And the reason why is because the tefillah of the shofar is that if the shofar represents Malchus and we're hearing it and accepting it, so then what's the accompanying sound? What's the subtext sound? And let this augur well for us. Let this raise our zikaron lefanecha letova. And so we blow the shofar in recognition of Malchus, but there's a hope in that Malchus that recognition should bode well for us, should see us through zikaron letova. And that's why the introductory psukim that we say before shofar, we say a perik seven times, and it's all about Malchus. I mean, lam nesech levnei Korach, kol amin tikuchav melech Hashem al goyim. It's all about Malchus. There's no question about it, and that's first and foremost establishing what the shofar is about. But then there's a few other psukim that we say just before we start. Min ameitzar korasika, and ani b'merchavka, recalling out, kolishamata, al talei maznacha, don't ignore us. That represents, in a sense, the subtext within the sound of the shofar, that for our part we are accepting Malchus. Let that acceptance lead to Yom HaZikaron. So this is, in a sense, the synopsis of the approach of Rav Leib Mintzberg, but I think it's really, it puts the whole of the day in a new light. And what's fascinating, aside from anything else, is that all of this, which is such an integrated vision of Rosh Hashanah, is based essentially on four words: Yom Truah, Zichron Truah. But to see how he goes through, explains how each word means what it means, and why it's said, and where it's said, and what its implications are, and how the words of the Chumash then become the words of the Tefillah. These are things which hopefully will resonate with us and stay with us. And Mirtz Hashem, we should all be signed and sealed for Ksiva, Chasima Tova, Shana Tova, for all of us and all of Klal Yisrael.